IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I am Saurabh Todi and I have with me my colleague Shambhavi Nayak. And on the occasion of the National Science Day, which just actually passed on Feb 28th.
The day we are recording this.
Yes, so we have been on time in that sense. So on that occasion, we'll talk about a very important component of science, which is funding. How do you fund it? How it is done in India? How not to do it? And how we should do it, and what are the various factors that go into making science sustainable, which is the theme for the Science Day as well. But sustainable in the sense of being able to sustain, the research and development ecosystem in India. So a very warm welcome, Shambhavi.
Thank you. So sort of every year at the budget, we look at the science R&D spend that we do. This is only looking at Ministry of Sciences, Science and Technology, not looking at overall R&D budget, just looking at Ministry of Science and Technology. And every year we are disappointed because we see that those numbers are falling, that the amount of budget that is spent is nowhere close to the budget that was allocated or estimated at the beginning of the year. And so I thought that this National Science Day, we celebrated to mark the discovery of the Raman effect by C.V. Raman in 1928, is a good time to speak about, look, we can do National Science Day, we can talk about science, but if we don't fund it, if we don't put our money where the mouth is, then it is not actually going to give any outcomes. So the theme, like you said, for this year is science for sustainable development. And you know that word sustainable is often abused. While all of it sounds nice, and science can really drive both economic growth as well as in a manner that is sustainable, it can't do it if it is not funded appropriately. And appropriately here really means in terms of the quantum of money we give, but also that it is a long-term game. It is not that you can give money today and expect you'll create a mission and the mission will work in 5 years. No, it has to be, there's so much of the ecosystem that needs to be built, that your investment has to be huge and consistent for a long period of time.
Yeah, plus, and I think, we'll come to specific in a bit, but I think mission modes are best used to accelerate the scope of development, not to establish it, right? You need extra money to just push that research, a bit ahead or push over like the envelope. But the problem is that the basic research and development ecosystem is quite challenging. So that is a big problem. So Shambhavi, on this major occasion, how much do we spend on research and development, like our sciences in India? Like, what's the landscape like?
So we have for the past several decades spent between 0.6 to 0.8% of our GDP on R&D, which is research and development. And if you think that it has gone up from 0.6 to 0.8%, that is not true. In fact, it has dwindled from 0.8% to 0.6%. And I think the other important factor here is that we don't know where all this money has gone. So it is not that this money has gone to the Ministry of Science and Technology only. It has gone to the Ministry of Education. It has gone to Ministry of Health. In fact, I was very surprised because I was looking at the expenditure budget a couple of weeks ago, and I found that the Ministry of Commerce had given a grant to IIT Madras to set up a lab for artificial diamonds, to do R&D in artificial diamonds. And I'm sure that this counts to your kitty of money spent on R&D, but I'm not sure whether that's the best use of the money, whether we need the government to be spending taxpayer money on setting up a lab for artificial diamonds. So, I haven't gone in deep into understanding that, but what I'm saying is that that while the number itself is small, we don't even know how it is allocated to what all activities it is allocated. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is obviously is a very big problem. It's also like not even very good classification, because it is not that Ministry of Science and Tech is the only one that actually funds these projects. There are, all the ministries have their own little, you know, these programs which they fund. And it is very difficult to kind of somewhat, you know, understand, you know, how much is the actual spend, and is it even like 0.64% or 0.8% or 0.25%, as some estimates also suggest. So that is actually quite concerning.
Yeah. And then you obviously compare it to what other countries are spending, which is somewhere between 2-4%. Yep. I mean, this is not what all countries spend, but really the, our ambition is to become a science leader. So we should look at countries with technological advantages and how much they spend. And they routinely spend between 2-4%. Again, every year for decades, not like a sudden this year we are given 3% and it's done, right? It is consistently for decades. Mm-hmm. US and UK has done it for the last 10 years. The OECD countries on an average spend 2.7%. Israel and Germany spend more than that. So there is obviously, there's a developed nation level of spending. And given that our ambition, as outlined by Prime Minister Modi, is to become a developed nation by 2047, we, to build that advantage, have to at least spend more than that.
Yeah,
right?
Plus, so, even China also spends, I mean, we are saying, you know, it's our competitor or as an adversary or something or the other, but they are increasingly spending. I mean, again, it is also very big, like a much bigger GDP sized, sorry, a country with a much bigger GDP. So if they are spending more than 3% of their GDP or around that, there is a significant amount of investment, and we are like really not anywhere.
Yeah, and it is not that the government is not cognizant of this, right? The mm-hmm. government itself has seen, there have been cabinet notes, the Science, Technology and Innovation Policy in 2013 noted this, that increasing spend to 2% GDP has been a national goal for some time. The 2017-2018 economic survey said that, hey, we need to put 2% of GDP into R&D, and I'm saying that 2% is still an underestimation, because if your developed countries are spending more than that, then you need to spend mm-hmm. more than what they are spending. But okay, even if they are spending, even if we go to 2%, the question really is, if we have known this for the past many decades, why is it not being put into implementation? Is there not a political will of, because obviously money is not being generated artificially. We will have to prioritize science and tech funding. We know the funding comes from the Ministry of Finance. And therefore, if an R&D bill comes, what we are basically saying, that priority has to be to fund those projects rather than other things. And obviously moving finances around is a very political move to make. So we really need a lot of political will.
No, that's true. At the same time, I think even the kind of mix of who spends R&D in India is also very unique, right? So India is among the very few countries where the government spends significantly more on R&D as compared to private sector. Even your universities don't spend as much as they do in almost all other countries. So it's a very skewed kind of like a spending pattern. At the same time, you know, government just, you know, like the National Research Foundation Bill just came into effect last month. But again, like that is like one way of trying to, you know, make the funding more organized. But again, I think there was this report by the Department of Science and Tech that a significant share of this funding is just taken by the national labs or like the other like research organizations of the government. So there's very much left for also, you know, public your universities, and then coupled with not much investment by public sector, by private sector. It's really, I think, something that is like quite wrong at so many levels.
I mean, the NRF is a very interesting experiment. A, because it is going to be, it is supposed to be majorly sourced through private funding. So of the 50,000 crores over the next 5 years, 36,000 crores is supposed to come from private sources. But we don't know what roadmaps have been put out, what incentives have been put out. Because if the private sector is currently not spending on R&D, which it is not, in India it spends about 36% of our R&D spending comes from the private sector, whereas in more developed countries, 70%. comes from a private sector. So why that gap remains needs to be figured out. And I don't think it is because a private sector is unwilling to fund. I think there are real barriers to why it is finding, investing any profit it's get into other things instead of doing more research, right? This could be because they might not be clear on whether their product will get approved, right? Whether the regulatory roadmap for, I mean, it's very starkly visible in the biotech sector that you and I study. You might be a seed company and you might be making profit, but will you put money into creating a GM seed if it is not going to get approved?
Yep.
Right. And this is true across a lot of these emerging techs, right? So genetically modified in, for example, Department of Biotechnology has come out and say, do research. Mm-hmm. But if you actually make that insect, it is going to be the Ministry of Environment and Forest, which will have to approve of it. And they haven't come out and said anything, right? It is not a yes or a no. And if that is true, why would anybody put money in doing research on that?
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
This is the pattern we see across different sectors too. Like even in defense, for example, the one major complaint of private sector defense companies has been that, okay, we are going to invest so much, so and so for defense R&D, but we need to have, you know, orders. Like you need to commit that, okay, if you produce this technology that we are asking or we want, if you produce, we commit to buying XYZ number of these orders, because that gives a certain level of, you know, okay, I have a commitment to future cash flows and everything. So all of those are something that I think we really need to, you know, fix. I mean, defense still, I think things may be improving a bit, but all on these other areas, a lot of handholding is required, not to say that, okay, you need to give too much money, but just make the regulatory environment more enabling. I think that itself would be a very, very big jump from what we have right now.
Yeah. And the other thing is that we, if you look at the VC and the PE ecosystem, there is not a lot of capacity to actually evaluate biotech projects. And again, this is biotech specific. Because they have long gestation times, it is difficult and there's higher risk. So we really need to start the process going. It is not, I mean, there are VC funds outside India which have done extremely well. So it is not that it is impossible.
I mean, that's true. I mean, at the same time, I think to build that capacity domestically is very important, because I mean, even let's say the government wants to fund, you know, they're like, okay, you know, I have this money, I'm gonna fund XYZ. There needs to be expertise that can determine what projects to fund, how to fund, do we need more collaboration. So all of that, you know, requires that skill set. And I think obviously that all needs nurturing and some hand holding, at least initially. So
yeah. I want to talk about the Israel model here, because I was quite fascinated by how they build the VC ecosystem in Israel. So many years ago, the Israel government put out a fund, and they basically put out, they committed $100 billion and said that we're going to break that down into 10 funds. For each fund, which looks at a particular sector, we will have a Israeli partner, VC partner, and an international VC partner. And they will together obviously also put in more money, but the foreign partner will train and build domestic capacity to evaluate biotech projects. And after 10 years, for eight out of the 10 funds, the government got an exit for their 40% share, and those funds basically grew to support the bioeconomy. So it is doable.
So that actually also solves the problem of, you know, like, oh, I'm just spending money with no return. You just make an environment which is more enabling.
Yeah.
You give the seed funding sort of, and then the private sector and the market should take care of itself, at least in vast majority of domains.
Yeah. I'm not saying that same model will work for India, but
something like that.
Yeah. We can think about building that capacity.
So, like, in general, whatever we have the budget, like, how it is utilized. I mean, at least we say it's very low, we spend very less. But if the government earmarks, like, 100 rupees for R&D? Do we at least spend that much?
No, we don't. And I've looked at Ministry of Science and Tech, as I said, from the budget that we do every year. And what is stark is that for consistently, the Ministry of Science and Technology has underspent. This is also this work that PRS Legislative has done looking at budgets. And we usually spend about 60-70% of the money that the Ministry of Science and Technology gets, depending on which department is spending the money. I spoke to a few scientists on why this might be happening. And what I understand is that utilizing money also requires bureaucratic capacity, right? So you can say that I will do 10 grants of 50 lakhs, or I will do 1 grant of
500.
Yeah, so 500 lakhs. When you don't have bureaucratic capacity, but we do a lot of these 50 lakh sort of things, right? It burdens that mm-hmm. capacity, right? Which means for every grant, you then need to show a utilization certificate. Then you have to
all this paperwork, right? It's like
then Ministry of Finance
plethora of forms.
Has to release the next grant, etc., etc. This leads to inordinate delays. And if you ever go on Twitter and follow any scientist, you will find them complaining about delays in getting their grant money, in getting their salaries eventually. What we have seen is that we need to strengthen that capacity, right? That bureaucratic capacity has to be built in, especially if we say that we are going to do NRF, we are going to increase funding, we are going to raise private sector funding and route it through the government, or we are going to go to 2% of GDP. If we don't have the capacity to actually mm-hmm. utilize that money, mm-hmm. Then what's the point?
Yeah, you need people all across levels, right? You need people in the ministry to figure out how to make sure that they fund projects which need funding. Then you need people who can do the paperwork. As you said, you know, it's much more easy and less troublesome for officials in the ministry just to give one big grant that, okay, I have to only handle one set of paperwork, which obviously in the Indian context is a bit too much. Then to handle that for 10 different projects, you know, it just creates much more hassle. So to simplify the processes, to make sure that there is human resource management in a way that you can bring in talent from outside, you can have people who are more forward-looking, you know, and are from the field. So, I mean, again, I think these are nothing new or very revolutionary ideas, but it is just kind of unfortunate that despite knowing what we should do, I think the implementation has lagged.
Yeah, I think again, the political will to actually prioritize R&D is critical. The ability to recognize that some projects require a lot more funding over a lot more time, but there are also projects that will take smaller amounts of money but need it timely. Especially people need to get paid timely.
Mm-hmm.
Again, none of this is actually rocket science. And even if it was, I think our scientists are capable of trying to figure that out. Why the salary delays happen in 2024 is beyond my understanding. And we have had some very capable people head these institutions, right? There's the departments as well. We have raised this to the Parliamentary Science and Tech Committee before. It was duly noted. It was put out to the concerned ministries. I mean, these are all publicly available documents that we know of. And yet it is not being rectified. It is not just, like I said, not just a quantum of money.
Mm-hmm.
You will see huge cries for that. But there are processes that needs to be fixed. How that money is spent, where that money is spent, and how to do that timely. And that, even with the 0.8%, will make an impact.
Mm-hmm. Because that money actually will reach, finally, where it needs to reach, will reach timely.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of these projects, either, you know, you have to abandon them or you have to choose projects which I know that have a much, like, I can't depend on timely funding.
Yeah.
Who will come to the labs and do research?
I personally know scientists who put in grants to buy equipment, but by the time the money was actually sanctioned, the manufacturer stopped making the equipment.
Wow. Okay,
but now the scientists can't spend the money elsewhere because the money is earmarked for that equipment. That is just waste.
I'm laughing right now, but it's like sad laughter because that's quite a sad reality. Honestly, I don't know what else to say. I think our listeners should realize. I mean, a lot of these, you know, grants or like this funding. I mean, research is not static; it's dynamic. You have to keep doing something. You keep needing reagents and everything. So if the processes are not smooth, I can't even do a like an experiment which may be long enough, which may need regular flow of equipment, reagents, everything, because I just don't know if I have it or not. Or if I start a process, it after 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I need something and it is something that I can't just store. You know, a lot of these reagents, a lot of these raw materials or at least precursors are something that need to be freshly made, freshly done. They are time sensitive. So you can't wait for weeks and months or in some cases years for these grants and these approvals. So I think a lot needs to change. And I think as it has been established more or less is that funding is a problem. But even the funding that we do right now, if that itself is streamlined, for example, I mean, one thing that we have talked about is that even the way funding is spent, you know, the general rules of
financial rules
that govern how government money should be spent, which I think is applicable to everyone using government money. Even the researchers are also bound by that. I think something as basic but very important as having a variation of those rules for scientists and researchers would be a huge step forward, where you can make sure that those rules adhere to the complexities and the realities of science and tech research, which is not the same as, you know, you trying to build a highway or like a train track. These things are different. And the quantum of it, how much freedom the ministries have, you know, even the Ministry of Science and Tech, how much freedom does it have to decide its own budget? You know, you can earmark X amount of money, but if that money is not available by the end of the year, that becomes a problem.
Yeah.
So a lot of, I mean, from our discussions also comes out the fact that it is not always a fact that the ministries are not spent, is that they know by the end of the year, if we have earmarked 1,000 rupees, what we will have is only 800 or even like 600. So, you know, that kind of anxiety is always there. So why to commit to an expenditure which we know might not be forthcoming? So on that note,
extremely positive note.
It is a bit sad on this National Science Day, but I think the hope is that given the recent steps, which are ambitious, we don't know how they will pan out, but hopefully they lead to a renewed discussion on how to first increase funding, how to improve funding, how to make it more efficient, and how to make it more targeted, both in its duration and its aim. So thanks a lot, Shambhavi. Hope to talk to you again when we have
more funding.
More funding. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.